Welcome to this Tuesday's, or however often the show is produced. Who knows? There's no way to know. Of the Athletic Hockey Show.
Impossible to say.
Impossible to figure that out, to know that for sure. I am Joy. It is, as always, or as never, because we haven't talked in weeks, or maybe even months, by Sean Gentile.
Whose fault was that? Not mine.
Summer's, I would say.
Summer and Craig. Those are my two elements that I'm placing blame on here.
Oh yeah, you've been doing this the whole time. You've been hopping on other days of the week.
Yeah,
really right. Controversial, by the way.
You're sticking me with Haley, Ian. My God, what's wrong with you? How could you do this to me?
Well, the good news is the Americans edition of the Athletic Hockey Show is back and in full force, because not only do we have Sean and I reunited, as you all have demanded, we've heard all the one person on Twitter that asked us when we were going to be back on. We heard that person. Thank you to that person.
Stop coming to my home. Leave me and my family alone. Everybody calm down. We're back.
And to make it even more American, Don Waddell joins us later, who is, of course, he's the GM of the Carolina Hurricanes, former Team USA architect of the Olympics, is you know, knee-deep in USA hockey, pretty, you know, has the red, white, and blue at all times. I think he was flying a flag on the Zoom call behind him while we talked to him. It's really surprising.
Very small bald eagle, but it was there.
It was there. You know what I meant to ask him? I'm really mad. I was going to make a joke because we were on Zoom. If Kotkaniemi's next contract was in the drawer behind him, I had that joke all lined up. And I didn't do it.
We didn't even get a Southeast Division Forever slipped in there. How did we? Long live the Thrash. How did we not say that?
The beauty of it is
out of practice. It's because we haven't talked in a month or whatever it's been.
And also, Don was really good, and it was a fun conversation. We of course talked about the offer sheet, the origins of it, how it came out. My favorite part that I'm glad I remembered was his quote that matched up word for word with Mark Bergevin. The quote that made me like spit out the drink I was had when I found out the news. Like it was, the whole thing was beautifully orchestrated. Executed, they got the player. It never happens in hockey. So that's a great conversation with Don.
He's the busiest man in the sport between the offer sheet, between running the business side
for in the rodeo
for the Hurricanes for all of these trips he apparently has made throughout his life to various rodeos and or mechanical bulls. Like my God,
I do like the he was casually dropping. I'm also in charge of the business, and I'm also in charge of ticket sales. Yeah. I'm also in charge, and it's like I got to run. I've got to plan our social strategy.
I'm not going to ruin the entire interview, but the highlight was. It's him assuming that we knew some random place in Fort Worth that had a mechanical bull. He's like, Gilly's. Like, oh yeah, sure. Haven't spent a ton of time in Fort Worth in my life.
I'm sure it's great
someday.
So Sean, we have so much to catch. I don't even know.
This is drinking from a fire hose, right? This is what happens when you. Even if it's a month, even if it's like the slowest month in the calendar, like stuff's going to stack up to talk about here.
Producer Jeff, who's great, gave us a little bit of an outline because he knew we weren't going to prepare for any of this. And I do like, we should probably start with the Olympic news. And I know it's a few days past, but I imagine a lot of you listening were also on vacation, I hope. The Olympics ran, and Sean, you and Dom and Corey immediately ran rosters that were both discouraging from an American standpoint because, gosh, the Canadian, like the extras you had as center on Canada, think you're closing the gap on the Canadians, they Ryan O'Reilly as a, sitting in the press box.
Oh, it's crazy. We had all that done. A week in advance because it was the worst kept. Was it even a secret? It was, and it was just the slow motion rollout of knowing that NHL players were going to be back. So we obviously had a couple calls about that, and it goes in order. We talked about Canada's first, and that just set the tone. Even when we had that conversation between the four or five of us who were on that call, it's like you're thinking about the U.S. roster, and then you're like, Sean Couturier isn't. Like he's not going to play for Canada, right? Ryan O'Reilly's going to be in the press box, and you make the Canada roster. I mean, and if you're me, you're like, that's the lens that you look at it through, right? Yeah. You're like, this is the Death Star. What is the U.S. roster going to look like? And that's not even the knock the crop of U.S. players, because it's as good as it's ever been. But when you're talking about, you know, the machine to the north and on that end of things, yeah, it's tough to come out of those roster building exercises with any thought other than, my God, this is everybody else is playing for second place.
This is supposed to be the American episode.
I need to turn up the jingoism. I'm out of practice here.
What I thought was interesting about your approach was that it wasn't like, here's who I would put on it, which is what I've done, you know, a million times. And I always like to build rosters that I think are fun and probably not at all realistic. You were like, here's what I think is going this Team USA is going to look like. And with that, you have to get a little bit into the heads of you know, the management team at USA Hockey and try to project, because you know they're not going to build it necessarily. They tend to not build it how we would build it.
Right.
Were there players that you, as I'm looking at this US roster, where you're like, okay, this guy wouldn't have been on my team necessarily, but as I'm trying to project, I have to put him on there because I know they're probably going to do it.
Yeah, talking specifically about the U.S. roster. Yeah. I mean, first off, Pronman was really helpful with all that, because he's plugged in with, you know, USA Hockey in the mindset there a little bit more than certainly the rest of us on that call were. We didn't know what to do with Johnny Gaudreau. He was the one where we're like, okay, like you look at the way the last couple years have gone, and on merit he might not deserve it, but It's still a Johnny Gaudreau. We didn't really know what to do with all the Islanders guys. It turned into would they rather have Brock Nelson or Anders Lee? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. That was tough. I didn't think Brian Rust was going to end up on the roster, but that was a conversation that we had. You know, he's actually a good example, I think, of the way we try to approach the process. Is you look at Brian Rust, and is he a star? No, but he's a capable 20 or 25 goal scorer at this point. He's really versatile. He can play really on this team. He can play on probably three lines, kills penalties, has been really good on the power play in Pittsburgh when he's gotten the opportunities. So you look at that sort of versatility and, you know, filling a role. And it does feel like that's going to be the things that they value in the process that they go through. But there were some weird choices on there.
Well, I think the mistake we make when doing these sometimes is we're not like, who's going to play on the PK? I'm like, I'm going to put Jack Hughes on the fourth line, and you know what I mean? And it's going to look great when Dom puts the graphic out.
Jeff, great Hughes, great example. Yeah. We're like, because I immediately was like, how is he not on this team? But like, are you going to play Jack Hughes on a fourth line? Do you keep Mrs. Spare? Because God knows he's not going to be in his typical role of being a top six center. So there needs to be some mind given to the role that they fill on a given team.
Yeah, Johnny Gaudreau is going to end up. I have to think he's playing high up on that
line. Yeah,
but who knows? I mean, right. I hear you.
Right. But like, look at someone. I mean. Brock over Brock Besser? Like, I don't know. Maybe. Right. Like, those are the kind of choices that, you know, they're going to have to make. And it's a good problem for USA Hockey to have, right? Because this is, especially at forward, this is as deep as we've seen. But it makes for some odd choices, because there's guys who you're just like, oh, no brainer. Like, but a guy like Kyle Connor, great example. Like, if he's not on your top line or your top two lines, like what exactly does he do on that team? And it's an open question.
When you move to the defense, this is where it gets interesting for the U.S., because it seems like it's a no-brainer. My guess is there's always one guy they sneak. Like, there's going to be one or two old guys they sneak onto the roster, right? And
we should have put Ryan Suter on the roster just in your honor.
No, I, like, look, the Craig, the I'm just Cousins I'm not making the case for Ryan Suter. I'm just no, saying.
No, I'm not. I'm like.
Or mean, Jeff Petrie, or somebody's going to get. Lose a spot.
I'm not. Yeah, like I'm only half joking about that, right? Like it happens. We've seen it. every year there's a couple old guys that sneak on because that's the kind of thing that they value. And if it's not Suter, maybe it's going to be someone else, right?
For sure. Maybe Ryan McDonough fills that void. You guys put Joe Pavelski on, which is, you know.
McDonough was kind of like, that was the thought process with him. I was like, okay, he's a veteran of the process. He's still pretty good. If you want to have like the quote unquote old guy, I mean, how Ryan McDonough's 31 or however.
Yeah, we had this talk about Ryan McDonough. He's not as old as we think he is.
No, I thought he was as old as me. Yeah, I thought he was 4 or 5 years older than he actually
is. Super old.
Apparently, but he is old. I'm decrepit. But it was like, it was like Ryan McDonough kind of fills that slot, right? Where he played a ton internationally and kind of fills that role. And he's still really good. And he would look really good paired with Adam Fox in particular. I think that was one of the fun kind of pairings that we came up. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
What was the debate? Only because I've lived it with Dom on Seth Jones. I mean, Stan Bowman is the GM, so we know where Stan.
It's a no-brainer. He's on the team. There's no sense in pretending that he's not. There was no sense in even having. That was part of why we framed the discussion that way, because it's like we're just not going to do the Seth Jones thing again.
Yeah.
Just not going to happen. And it'll happen. God knows it'll happen with the Tears project and all sorts of stuff we discuss heading into the season. But that trying to figure out how good Seth Jones is exactly was not, it couldn't be part of the discussion.
He's going to be on the team.
Yeah. Like there's no sense in pretending otherwise.
All right. Before we get to Don, I do want your, because we haven't really talked about it, I do want your unfiltered opinion of the offer sheet effort by Carolina. When that all went down, what did?
I think it's really funny. And there was a point where I thought, I really do think it makes sense for both teams. Like, I think he, at $6 million this year and being part of, you know, having that control over him moving forward, I think he makes sense for the Carolina Hurricanes. And I think saying no to Kotkaniemi at 6-1 for 1 year, A, and then taking first and third round picks in return for him make a lot of sense for the Montreal Canadiens. Both teams are better now than they were than they were 2 weeks ago, I think. I think Christian Dvorak over Jesperi Kotkaniemi makes Montreal better.
Big winners, the Arizona Coyotes. They get to max out the asking price.
Yeah, no, good for them. Great organization.
Do they have a rink? Is there somewhere to play?
I don't know. They're just gonna wait for Arizona State to build their shit. Play to 5,000 seat college rink for 2 years.
Oh my gosh!
Cross your fingers on Tempe. Yeah, way to go. Good job, guys.
A story as old as time. All right, let's get to the Don Whitelaw conversation because it was fun. And Don, I've been covering first GM I ever covered as a kid reporter.
I didn't even want to crack that one open. But my God, you've known Don Whitelaw for so long.
I wanted you to ask him what his first impression of me when I showed up at the Thrashers practice facility.
That's a function. What? No, that's a function of me operating on Pacific time at the moment. I'm not clicking on all cylinders.
Well,
not ready to make fun of Craig with Don Waddell at 7:17 a.m.
That's fine. I appreciate that. All right, let's dive into that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We are now thrilled to be joined by Don Waddell, GM of the Carolina Hurricanes, and the man who refuses to take a day off this summer, crashing vacations left and right. Don, how are you? Thanks for doing this.
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my! So is it slowing down at all now? Are you going to give yourself a week before you make huge news in the hockey space?
Well, the hockey space might be under control, but, you know, I run the business side right now. Things are very busy trying to gear up for the season. So there's a lot to be done, but you know what? It's all going in the right direction, and we're happy about how the summer's played out from a hockey team standpoint.
Yeah, we should start with the offer sheet. And you know what, Don, so much of it, killed me and all of us over it. Like the whole thing was fantastic. But I would say that what I was dying to know from the second I saw it was whose idea was it? Like where did this shit come from? And so now I bring you here to ask you that question. Who gets credit for this?
For how the offer sheet was structured, or the whole thing,
like who was like, you know what we should do? We should offer sheet Kotkaniemi. Who was that person?
What happened is, you know, we started, you know, we were short top nine forward, and we were trying to look to see what was out there. Not much. We felt there was free agency was going to help us. Started looking around teams, and we knew that Montreal was having a hard time signing Jesperi. So, you know, I talked to Mark Bergevin a week before the offer sheet and said, you know, I'd be interested in trading for the player. And so we had a lot of dialogue that week all the way through Friday night about trading for the player. And, you know, when it became apparent that that wasn't going to work, you know, we knew what as a Friday night, we started talking about the offer sheet. We knew that that compensation was a first and third. And so, you know, I talked to Mark about it, and at the end of the day, we couldn't reach a deal, and so we moved forward. So I would say the whole organization was supported. Remember, we know this player real well. He was taken right behind Andrei Svechnikov in the draft at number three, and so we did a big dive back 3 years ago into this player, his personality, his ability, and all that. And, you know, we had a lot of discussion about it back in that draft year. So, you know, we knew the player well. We felt like that, you know, this player has tremendous upside, still 21 years old. How often do you have a chance to go get a 21-year-old player off of a roster that's played already 3 years in the league? So, you know, decision was made to try to trade for a player. And then when it became apparent that we couldn't make a trade, that's when we decided to take the next step and make an offer sheet, something that teams have used in the past, part of the CBA.
I've been covering you a long time. I don't think you've used the offer sheet as a, right? No. This is your first. We've all in the hockey media space like debated the merits of it, why they're not used more often, and why they are. And you've known Mark a long time. You've got a relationship with these GMs a long time. Is there any like code, or did you feel like you were violating some unwritten rules when you were going through this process, or what was the thought process from your perspective?
No, you know, Mark and I have always had a good relationship. Obviously, we went through it a few years ago with Sebastian Aho, a little different circumstances. And, you know, I was talking to Mark since Tuesday, you know, so obviously he knew we had strong interest in the player. We talked every day through that whole week. And then, you know, so it wasn't any surprise by any means. He knew that we were definitely interested in the player and did whatever, put our best efforts forward to try to make a trade for the player. And even as, you know, we said, if you're going to match, just call the agent, make your own deal. The offer sheet was not something, you know, everybody talks about revenge. It's not about revenge. You know, revenge is that's a strong word that's going to get you in trouble. That's your only reason for doing it. You know, this goes back to who the player is and who we thought about the player going back even to his draft year. So, you know, that's how it moved in. Eventually got the offer sheet on Saturday afternoon.
Did Mark give you the courtesy call 2 years ago? Like you gave him the call the week before the offer came. Did that, was that something that was on the books a couple years ago?
I got a call the morning of the offer sheet with saying they'd like to trade for a player. And, and 2 hours later, 3 hours later, I got the offer sheet. So a little different circumstances. And, you know, Tom Dundon had just bought the team.
Right.
You know, and there was some people were testing him to see if he was going to, you know, put up the money. And obviously when we got the offer sheet, we know the player Sebastian real well. It took us, you know, literally a minute to talk about it and knew we were going to accept the offer, but a little different circumstances in both deals. And certainly hopefully, you know, that it is, you know, again, it is part of the CBA. But you don't see it used very often, and I'm sure it will be another multiple years before we see another one.
I mean, you don't see it used often. You don't see it work often. Like, what was it? Dustin Penner was the last one. So this is, I mean, this is a rarity. When did you know, you said you were going to match yours right away. Like, everyone knew that. And some level, I think Montreal did you guys a huge favor because that had the potential to drag out with your player. Mm-hmm. In this case, I don't, you know, there was a healthy debate from day one whether or not they would match. When did you know for sure you were getting the player this time?
I didn't know until Montreal put out their release 15 minutes before. You know, when we made the offer, and that's why, you know, when you look at it, we spent a lot of time talking about it internally, you know, because we wanted to put something forward that, you know, Montreal, like a lot of teams, have cap situations. You know, if we make it a long-term deal, it's probably easier to match because they know what the cost is going forward. Mm-hmm. So that's why we just decided we're going to do 1 year and make it a number, then make it difficult, then obviously we can make it work from our end.
Why do you think this is something we see so infrequently? Like, is there one big reason, or is it just a combination of a bunch of different things?
I think most times, if you look at the young players that are coming out, most times people feel like they're going to match. And yeah. the other thing you got to remember, you got to have a player that's willing to sign an offer sheet. Mm-hmm. You know, just because the money might be where he wants, but it might not be a place he wants to go. So it's multi-fixed as far as, you know, you're not going to do it just to raise somebody's cap or make it hard on a team. You want to do it because you really want the player. And I think then you got to have the player that wants to go to that team. So I think multiple things play into why you don't see it that often.
I like the concept of doing it to a player who's, you know, the second tier player who's not, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, you should go get Pettersson. And it's like, no, like they're going to match the superstar.
Right.
But maybe the guy that you're not sure what you have yet, who, you know, you could price out a little bit like that. That's what I liked about this one, because I mean, you're still betting on potential. I mean, that's a high dollar value for what we've seen so far from him, but like, you're still making a bit of a bet there.
Right. And you know, it's an acquisition cost is the way we look yeah. at it. Mm-hmm. How many times mm-hmm. do you get a chance to get a 21-year-old player that was drafted third overall? You know, you're right. You talk about some of the other free agents, restricted free agents. And, you know, first of all, they're probably going to match anyways. But then it's also you got to get the player, the agent to agree that they're going to leave whatever city they're in. So, yeah. You know, you're right, though. I think, you know, it's like Aho. We knew right away we were going to match the deal. Aho is our franchise player, and we weren't going to let him go. And so I think that's what makes it tougher on the team when these situations do happen, like it did with this player.
That's great.
Do you think he's a $6 million player? Like I know it's just for the year, but
no, he's not a $6 million player right now. Mm-hmm. Again, but you had to put a price tag on acquiring the player. Yeah, we knew the compensations, the first and a third. But again, you know, if you told me you go buy a player, you know, you can't go buy players anymore. You know, you can't mm-hmm. you can't say to a team, I'm going to give you $10 million and I want this player. You just can't do it. So, you know, you look at it as a total package. You know what the draft picks are going to be and you know what you're going to pay the player. And that's the acquisition price to get this type of player.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because people like GMs overpay all the time in unrestricted free agency, like those, and those are for 29-year-olds. So I'm sitting here going, if you're going to overpay for a player or whatever your definition of overpay is, do it for a 21-year-old. At least there's a fighting chance he is worth. Like, you know, some of these contracts signed on July 1st, you're like, boy, that's going to be a rough one in 2 years. Like this one, you don't know.
And it's for a 29-year-old player for 7 years or 8 years. Right. Like you're overpaying a 21-year-old for potentially 1 year, and then, you know, whatever happens after that is up to you guys.
Yeah, we have one of those decisions this summer too. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You're familiar with the concept. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty clear where you're it's just the way you've addressed this offseason. Like, it's clear where you're paying Svechnikov, you're paying the young players, and I think in a cap space world where young players are so valuable, like that is where you have to put your resources.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, as you move forward, you know, we look at our team now with, you know, with Svechnikov and Jasper and Marty Nakesh and Aho, you know, these guys, we do it right and they continue to grow as players, we can be in pretty good shape with some pretty good young players for a long time.
Sean, do you have any more thoughts on the offer sheet before I turn the page?
No. I think we about covered it. I mean, it's just always such a fascinating thing to see from the outside, just because it's a process we just don't we just don't witness all that much. So yeah, it was interesting to see.
The other thing, Don, and not to you know, go, I don't want to like change the mood here, but today's the 10-year anniversary of, you know, the plane crash, the KHL locomotive, and that killed, among others, Brad McCrimmon, who you knew really well. And I, you know, Brad's a favorite of mine, and obviously in yours as well. And I just wanted to, I mean, get your thoughts on 10 years. And this isn't why we had you on here, but I was thinking of that this morning. Like, that's, I can't believe it's been 10 years. And like, I can still hear Brad's laugh. And it's, what do you think when you think of that?
Yeah, no, you know, the one thing we all know, Brad was a great player and he was a good hockey person, but he was an even better person.
Yeah.
And that's what you remember. You know, remember the laughs, sitting there having a cold beverage at night after games and stuff like that, because he was just a good nature, got along with everybody, very, very, very smart hockey guy. And obviously he had a great career as a player. So, but the most important thing for me is always that, you know, you remember him as a person.
Yeah.
He was a very good person, as you know.
He treated everybody great. Like, you know, I was just, when I was dealing with him as a kid reporter, you know, didn't know anybody, didn't know anything from anything. And he, you know, he'd sit down and have a Grey Goose with me at the, you know, we're in Montreal, and my goodness, you know, it was, and that's how you learn. That's how you learn the game. And he was very patient with me. And as I was learning how anything worked and would explain things, and it was just, you can always tell how good a person is and how they treat everybody, right? From the server to the, you know, and that was Brad. Like, you never knew who he was dealing with. Everyone got it. It was great.
I agree with you 100%. It's doesn't matter what your level was or what your title was. It was all the same.
Yeah, he was great. So, man, I can't believe that's been 10 years. So Don, you mentioned a little bit on the business side. You wear multiple hats there in Carolina. As you kind of get things geared up for training camp, what's the biggest challenge going into a season? We have no idea really how any of this is going to go.
Yeah, you know, we just got some COVID memos in the last 2 hours and Friday. So, you know, we're continuing to have to adjust on the fly because, you know, as we all know, we're living in a time where nobody really knows what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, we all are hoping that things continue to get better. And, you know, it's, you know, our state's taking a different approach. We are a mass state, but, you know, it's not about shutting things down. It's about getting people out vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know, people who get vaccinated, you know, the better off for everybody. And, you know, it's, we're living in a interesting time. And, you know, hopefully though we can, you know, we're a little over a month away from starting the NHL season. Hopefully we can get things, our house in order, and be able to operate as we normally would in a normal season.
Anything good in those COVID memos? You want to break some news on here for us?
Yeah, let's go.
I haven't got through the 7 pages.
Some dense reading material.
Yeah, I know, you know, anybody associated with the team is going to be vaccinated to be around the team. And, you know, that's something that we don't have any issue with. We're going to be 100% compliant, so it's not an issue for us.
I was pleasantly surprised at the NHL's vaccination numbers in terms of the players. When I saw it started out a little slow, and I wasn't, knowing the makeup of the players, I was worried it wouldn't get there. And it seems like, do you know your number in terms of the percentage?
Yeah, we'll be 100%. Everybody has gotten at least the first shot. So
that's great. Time
camp starts, we'll be at 100%. It was something that, you know, again, we just try to explain, our team doctor is involved talking to players. We had a couple of new players that hadn't gotten it, and, you know, we just talk through the whole situation. Again, you know, we're not forcing anybody, everybody's doing it on their own, but talk about the consequences and what would transpire if, you know, COVID did hit our locker room. So we should be in good shape.
Well, you guys had a couple months to kind of work in silence too. Like, it's not an NFL scenario or a baseball scenario where you see teams kind of level up and like, okay, we're here. Like, it happened in real time for them. So with you guys, you could at least go dark for a couple months and then come back and say like, all right, look how good we've done. We're going to be at 100%.
Yeah. Well, I think the first protocols that came out some month ago or whatever, when we talked about, you know, the testing, if you're not vaccinated, you'll still be tested every day.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that helped change some of the mind. You know, you have some religious faiths that I understand, and, you know, you got some political beliefs that I don't quite understand, but, you know, it's something that, you know, we all have to deal with, and, you know, hopefully we can all stay safe.
So was the release of the protocol effective? Was it, did that move some guys over to the vaccinated side in the last couple of weeks?
I think it all helps. You know, mm-hmm. I think it all helps. I think education was a big part of it, getting our doctors involved. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, instead of hearing it from my trainer or from me and my coach, you're hearing it from, mm-hmm. you know, people that live this life every day, that deal with it every day. So I think it's a combination of everything, but I would think the medical, the department of the NHL and our medical internal people really did a good job of just laying it out for the players.
Yeah, how much that was on your end? Were you guys setting up calls with the team's medical staff and doing that on the team end of things?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we were very proactive. I think we had 5 players after free agency that had not been vaccinated. So we were very proactive of making sure they knew what the circumstances were. And again, you know, we had our own internal meeting first, and we weren't forcing anybody to do it. Everybody had to do it on their own account. But we just wanted to make sure that they had all the facts involved in it.
There was one more offer sheet. I just remembered. I can't believe I forgot to ask this question, Don. When I read the quote from you on the release, that was the quote from Mark Bergevin, I died. Like, I laughed so hard. Like, I was like, that was the funniest thing I think I've seen in a release in my life. It's cool. Come on. Who's that? Where did that come from?
I have to say, you know, our marketing social team do a tremendous job. And, you know, the whole release, a few other things, as you know, there, you know, it was nothing against Montreal. It was all about trying to build our fan base. Our fan base has been very loyal through this last year and a half or so. And, you know, our social gets huge kudos around the league from the NHL, you know, and their numbers. And, you know, we got a great team. And so we talked about it. And certainly they had some ideas. And again, it wasn't mad at anybody other than trying to engage our fans as we try to do on a regular basis.
So is that not one of the business aspects that you have one of the elements of the business pie that you have your fingers in? You weren't sending the tweet on TweetDeck whenever all that went out, I assume.
At the end of the day, I guess I had to sign off on everything. Yeah. But they were very engaged in the last day or so. Actually, it wasn't even until Saturday morning when I made them aware that that was potential option that we're talking about signing up offer sheet. So they moved pretty quickly and came up with some pretty good ideas.
That was great. I love it. Now it's making me start to wonder if GM quotes and releases are actual GM quotes. I don't now I'm doubting everything that's coming through my email, Don. I'm sorry. I don't know how accurate those are from now on.
You guys don't
you don't actually say we want to thank this guy for his time in the organization and all his contributions. All right, last one for me. Are you done roster building, Don? Because we, you know, there's a guy in Eric Staal that, you know, would look great in back in Carolina. What work do you still have done here?
Yeah, I think we're in pretty good shape right now. You know, we have 13 forwards and 8 defensemen or 7 defensemen and 2 goalies. You know, you're always looking, you know, I'm not going to make any calls or not take any calls because you never know if there's something you feel like that can help your hockey club and have a move to help somebody else. You know, it's going to be you need a partner to make a deal. But I think overall, we're pretty happy how the summer's gone and look forward to get going here in training camp.
Awesome.
So from a hockey standpoint and a business standpoint, it does kind of feel like you guys are entering kind of a different phase. Like there's expectations on the ice and there's increased, you know, attention paid partially because of the social team who do such a great job to how you guys exist in that sphere too. So is that the name of the game this season? Just sort of progressing on both those fronts?
Yeah, 100%. You know, you marketing is a wonderful tool, but you have to have something to market also. Mm-hmm. And you remember where we probably took the biggest step as a marketing team is when a friend of ours that did Hockey Night in Canada a few years ago called us a bunch of jerks. I'll be honest, within an hour that night, we were printing T-shirts. And I give all the credit in the world to Mike Foreman, who oversees our marketing team, and that because, you know, we jumped on that. And then, you know, and then we fell into the emergency goalie situation in Toronto. You know, so we've had some things handed to us pretty good, but it's one thing to get handed to us, but another thing to capitalize on it. And we've certainly capitalized on all those things that we talked about.
Yeah, and it's another thing to understand that it's something that would play well with your fan base specifically. Like it seems like you guys know what'll work. You guys know what'll work with the people who actually care about who care about your team the most.
Yeah, and you know we're in a market. I'm not going to say it's not a hockey market. It's becoming more of a hockey market. Mm-hmm. So we have to try to continue to attract new fans. You know, and I can tell you that over the last 3 years. Our fan base has really grown, and you know, it even goes, you know, if you go back when Tom Dundon bought the team till today, we're up probably over 4,000 season tickets. And you know, a combination of that obviously is we made the playoffs the last 3 years, which helps. Last year was a tough year because we were coming off a pretty good high, and then everything hit last year, but the momentum has picked up again this summer. And I think as we approach the start of the season, we'll have our highest season ticket base since back in the early 2000s, and looking forward to continuing to move forward.
Well, Don, thanks for doing this. Thanks for carving out time as you guys are making news and making waves.
Well, we figured the hockey world was pretty quiet. We were about a Saturday night at 5:30. Everybody was sitting on their decks starting to have their little coverage. And, so we just wanted to make sure that we kept you guys. You know, employment is hard these days. We want to keep you guys all busy.
Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate that. That's who I felt for was Arpin and Civi and the beat writers, because I'm like, I can sit here and laugh at the release and be like, this is great. And then they're scrambling. Luck, best of luck, Civi.
And Sarah said she couldn't reach me because I was at the rodeo that night.
she got a lot of play out of that one too, man. She had her gift wrapped the lead for her. It was great.
What she failed to say is the rodeo was in our building to be the president of the arena. Also, I was not working at the rodeo.
You were there out of professional obligations as well. It wasn't solely a personal trip.
I've gotten more emails from people saying I didn't know you're a rodeo guy. It was kind of funny. Sarah walked me right into that one.
Did you know you were a rodeo guy?
I rode the mechanical bull back in 1980-81, my first year pro in the Central Hockey League in Birmingham, Alabama. So I go way back. You know, I'm way back. So I had some of those days living in Houston with the cowboy boots and the cowboy hats and that, but I could say they haven't come out for quite a few years.
How long did you last in the mechanical bull? Now we're getting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I rode the mechanical bull. Tweaked my back a little bit.
And of course, as one does.
That. Yeah, you'll have that.
then in the next summer, I went to Gillies and rode the real bull in Gillies. You remember Gillies, the big bar in Fort Worth,
okay. Texas. No, but that sounds great.
Yeah, they had live. Oh, there's a movie on it. They had live bulls there, so I got to ride the real bull in there. That didn't last very long, though. but it's an experience. At least I can say that I've ridden both mechanical and real bulls.
So when Civi writes, "Not your first rodeo," with the next line, that was so perfect. It was the timing was it was just beautiful. Just
too gift wrapped. Love it.
Well, thanks, Don. Looking forward to seeing you in person at some point here. And
whatever world we live. Thank you.
Yeah. This is fun.
Have a good week, and we'll talk to you.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Well, it felt inevitable. Ryan Miller is part of the USA Hockey Brain Trust officially. He was part of that raft of hires that we've seen over the last couple of days. Is, you know, Mike Sullivan filled out his staff, and we saw some guys from Pittsburgh join on there. And what exactly is Ryan Miller's title with USA Hockey at this point, Craig?
I don't know. Here's what I would say. It doesn't matter. Ryan Miller immediately walks into that room. I'm glad they did it. I'm glad he's willing to do it because when we had him on, there was going to be a little bit of a downtime. Would that last 3 weeks for him?
Yeah, I think that's sort of what I was getting at. It felt inevitable that he was going to get involved in one way or another, right? Like he's such a smart guy and such a thoughtful guy, and clearly the desire, you know, to be a part of some sort of team building, you know, brain trust was there. Like we knew that when we talked to him a few months ago. And I think USA Hockey is a great spot. He can be an assistant coach on this team, whatever. Make him the American goaltending czar, right? Like if he wants a job in that capacity with USA Hockey, like he should just write his ticket, and I'm sure he is. So good to see him involved. Always good to see guys like that transition into the next phase of their lives pretty seamlessly.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's smart. I mean, hopefully Ryan, I like where Ryan's head's at. I think he'll be an important voice in the room for USA Hockey. All right, I'm gonna end in a downer, but I Don and I, we, you know, in the interview with him, we mentioned it's been 10 years since the locomotive plane crash, and I wanted to highlight a story that Dan Robson did on the coaching staff. And to me, it was personal because it was Brad McCrimmon, and Brad is unbelievable, or, you know, was an unbelievable guy, influential on me and helping me learn the game at a deeper level. And
I mean, you and I worked together at Sporting News back then when the crash, around the time the crash happened. And I remember always, even before that, Brad McCrimmon, whether it was with the Thrash or with whoever else, I mean, he was a go-to guy for you. I feel like he popped up in a lot of your work. And I think
a lot of Brad McCrimmon.
Yeah, but well, right. But part of that was because he was, that's the kind of guy he was. Yeah. I mean, Don alluded to it, right? He was a go-to guy for media folks, partially because he was such an approachable, decent person. So yeah, I watch you cover him and as a coach, and then afterwards.
What I loved about Brad, He loved the game of hockey, and that was the motivation. Besides being a decent human being, which he was, he loved hockey, and so he wanted if I got something wrong in the paper or whatever, or maybe didn't seem to understand it, he would pull me aside and say, "Here's the situation." And that happens, but probably not enough, right? And he wasn't doing it to help me. Certainly, he probably was doing it to help the players that he was coaching, so that the public facing side of it and this, you know, in this local coverage was fair. And, you know, that was his motivation probably. And along with just being a great guy. And, you know,
I don't know if readers realize how important guys like that are to, mm-hmm. are to people like you and me, because especially us, as in like the two of us specifically, like we didn't really play hockey growing up. We weren't hockey guys. This is the business we've chosen, and it's the opportunities we've been afforded, but that's all well and good. But being good at these jobs also entails talking to people like the Brad McCrimmons of the world, who you know can explain stuff to dopes like us. A,
that's right,
and B, also pass on that love of the game that he had on a level that frankly the two of us didn't come up with.
That's right. That's 100% right. So I just wanted to tell, like, just remember Brad specifically, and just, you know, I'm thinking of Maureen, his wife and kids, Carlin and Liam, you know, who probably, you know, I remember seeing Liam around Joe Louis Arena when I moved back to Detroit, and always a presence as a kid. And I'm sure he's probably, whatever, 30 now, or I don't know, who knows what happens with time, but It never gets easier. I'm sure for the McCrimmon family, and you know, I just wanted to tell them we're thinking of them, and he's still a huge loss. And I'm glad that, you know, people are still, it's a tragedy, but I'm glad we're still having these conversations, because huge impact that, you know, so many people on that plane made a huge impact to the people around him.
I think Robson's story did as good as anybody can of communicating that too. That's it.
Yeah.
It's worth some time today.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. If you're unfamiliar with any of it, and I was actually that's the other thing. I was reading the comments. I was surprised. People were like, oh, wow, what a sad story. I don't remember that. And that's how, like, that's where we're at. Like,
10 years, man. Like, I don't know. You're talking about people in their 20s now who, you know, just weren't, it wasn't a thing for them. So it's quite a, cause I just remember what a day that was, just professionally and personally and whatever else, and to see people get exposed to it through Dan's story is wild.
All right. No good way to close this after that, but I do want to encourage people now. We're back. If you subscribe to The Athletic, we like to interact with listeners and subscribers in the comments. And we do this. Like, I'm looking at the last episode, which was years ago, the where we had Jim and Ellen Hughes. They were so good. They were so great.
They were awesome.
And we had some comments. We interacted. And, you know, we've been banning phrases. So I'm going to add one to the list that I have to refine again now that we're back. Christopher K.
Someone said 100%, which is 100% me.
Oh, they like said we had to ban 100%?
I don't know if I can do that, but that would be a good one. It's a crutch. Instead of saying yes, I say 100% about 50% of the time.
It works every time. Someone wanted to ban the phrase "run it back," Christopher K. That's probably me, because I like that phrase a lot. But
it doesn't affect me, so I don't care.
Okay, run it back's gone. 100%'s gone.
No problem. whoa!
And my favorite comment from Yardina says, please don't ever end the American edition. And this is, we're here to say the American edition is living on for another season, at least.
It's forever.
And forever in our hearts. Thank you to Sean for checking in from vacation in Seattle, wherever it is you are. Thanks to...
I'm not telling you where I am specifically.
Of course, you never do, which is, that's fair. That's your right. Thanks to Don for joining us and putting up with our immature questions about rodeos and mechanical bulls. Thanks to Jeff, for as always, for producing, and thank you for listening, everybody. It's great to be back.